Dear listeners, this will be the program I present from a boarding gate at the Barajas Airport in Madrid. Tonight we will listen to Filibuster, a reading by Frank Lepovicin, read by the poet Vanessa Place at the Jeu de Paume Museum in 2013. I want to thank Frank Lepovicin, the artist, for allowing us to reproduce this valuable document in our program. We will have the pleasure to listen and to witness the alchemic transformation of excruciating attention into poetic delight. If I say attention, I'm already looking for trouble here, since we're talking about a filibuster reenacted, used as a script and performed with the purpose of aesthetic observation. Frank Lepovici is one of the artists who has taught me to see how languages, policies, various linguistic and visual contracts can be brought to an arrest precisely when they double. They are not physically appropriated. They are not seized or taken. We're talking about reproductions. When they double and reappear in the ecosystem of art. It is not a suspension unless it is also an agreement among those who witness it. Something is unfolding. A poem is a certain display of language. And that observation without ends, all is suddenly all means, is a poetic process. We don't see or hear. Rather, something appears to analyze itself. It is the striptease of discourse. In other words, the opposite of filibustering. It goes on and on. But now, rather than a sabotage of democracy, it is an orgy of associations and anecdotes. A celebration of speech, let's not call it free, but rather loose speech. So here we are, reading and lecturing and filibustering. Dear listeners, this might be the one program I present from the arrivals terminal at the Fiumicino airport in Rome. Ah, how many times I've dreamed of a lecture that is as profuse, as threateningly endless, and as stuffed with useless references as a good Texan filibuster. If there is any genuine exoticism in US politics, it may well be found in the Filibuster Act. An act that makes us dream of a labyrinth of introductions, digressions, and parenthetical tunnels. It makes us dream of abject adjectives and odd verbal compounds hanging from the mouths of filibusterous congressbusters. And now, before I filibuster my own broadcast, I will leave you with the work of Frank Lepovici and the voice of Vanessa Place. Enjoy.
Senate, Wednesday, June 12, 1935. Legislative day of Monday, May 12, 1935. The Senate met at 12 o'clock meridian on the expiration of the recess. Mr. Copeland from the Committee on Commerce, to which referred the following bills, reported them each without amendment and submitted reports thereon. Mr. McCarran, Mr. President, President Officer, Mr. Hatch in the chair. Do the Senator from Louisiana yield to the Senator from Nevada? Mr. Long, I yield. The President Officer, does the Senator from Louisiana yield to the Senator from Maryland? Mr. Long, I yield for a question. I yield. I do not want to lose the floor. I yield for a question to the Senator from Minnesota. If I'm to yield for a question, I must hear those Senators. I do not wish to yield to any discussion that will take the floor away from me. I yield to the Senator from Minnesota if permitted to do so for a question. I yield again. I yield for a question to the Senator from Alabama. I yield for a question. I do not know. I do not know. I yield. I yield. I yield for a question. Mr. Long resumed his speech after having spoken for about 5 hours. He yielded to Mr. Thomas of Oklahoma, and the following debate ensued. I yield. I yield. I yield. I yield for a question. We would hear the hens squalling and the chicken raising Cain out in the backyard at night, and we would run out and take a lamp and a shotgun to see what was the matter, and lo and behold, we would raise up the hen, and there would be a chicken snake that had swallowed every egg there was in the nest, and he would be so big, he would be so puffed out in the stomach that you could hardly see how he could crawl away from there. This chicken snake would be about 1 inch around at one end and 1 inch around at the other end, and about 8 inches around in the middle. And he would crawl through a rail fence in order to break the eggs. The way a chicken snake works, a chicken snake will swallow every egg there is in the nest and crawl through a rail fence and break the eggs so as to get the benefit of the nutrition that is in the eggs. I yield for a question. I yield for a question. Mr. Connolly, Mr. President, will the Senator yield? The President Officer, does the Senator from Louisiana yield to the Senator from Texas? Mr. Long, I yield for a question. I do not want to lose the floor. Mr. President, my friend from Texas has gone. He sat here and acted as if he was interested and asked a question and got up and left. That is the trouble. We will never be able to convert senators if we cannot get them to listen to us because they will not read what we say. I am going to prove what I just said. I yield for a question. I yield. I yield. For a question only. I yield for a question. I yield for a question only. I yield. I think more of informing the senators who are here until they are converted. I think that will help the trouble the country is in. We are going to have to cure the minds of some senators, and then we shall have recovery, Mr. President, without losing the floor. And I include in the unanimous consent request a request that I not lose the floor. I desire to ask that every senator be made to stay here and listen to me, unless he has himself excused. Several senators rose. Mr. President, I am not going to take advantage of time. I am not one to hasten along events. I am not one to implore people to listen to me. I am giving the senators here all that I know. It may not be very much, but I am giving senators everything that I know, and that is all I can do. I can give them such advice as I am capable of giving, and no more. Mr. President, the Senate is almost empty. It is a very late hour. I do not mind going on for a good while. I enjoy this work, and I do not mind continuing for a long time tonight. I enjoy discussing this subject as long as I can get anyone to listen to me. And if it is desired to have a vote tomorrow at any time, the Senator from Mississippi changes his mind about it, I would be glad to yield for a question. Or I would be glad to yield for unanimous consent to vote at any hour tomorrow which may be desired on the particular question now pending before the Senate. Mr. President, as is known, I have considerable social obligations in this city myself. I was writing a book here a few days ago on social etiquette, but never got the time to complete it. I prepared recipes for many celebrated Louisiana dishes that I was instructing people how to mix and prepare. I was preparing a recipe for a very fine New Orleans salad dressing. I have been asked to attend many important social affairs in the city to instruct people how to prepare that salad dressing. Also, Mr. President, people up in this part of the country never have learned to fry oysters as well as we have done down our way. I have spent a number of evenings acquainting people with how to prepare oysters. I had a bucket of oysters sent to me from Louisiana the other night, and I was asked by a very fine bunch of my friends if I would not drop around with the New Orleans oysters and fry some of them for them in good Louisiana style and way. So, Mr. President, I bought a frying pan about 8 inches deep. I brought the frying pan because I was afraid they would not have a frying pan there in which I could fry the oysters. I brought a frying pan, as I said, 8 inches deep and about 17 inches in diameter. Mr. Tidings, Mr. President, will the Senator yield? Mr. Long, I yield. Mr. Tidings, when the Senator fries oysters, is pot liquor one of the concomitants? Mr. Long, no, that does not go in with the oysters. I will come to that later. I am coming to that because I am going to have my remarks taken down and a copy made and sent out to the several places where I was supposed to go this evening in order that these recipes and directions may be had by those people. And I will ask the stenographer that, as soon as possible, he give me at least 7 extra copies of these recipes, which I dictate to the record, so that I may have them for ready circulation in case we do not have an early adjournment. As I was going to illustrate, Mr. President, about these oysters that I got from New Orleans. I bought this frying pan 8 inches deep and 14 to 16 inches or 17 inches in diameter. And I bought a 10-pound bucket of cottonseed oil lard, but I forgot to get a strainer. When I got to the place to fry the oysters, I had everything there except the meal and the strainer. The lady had some meal, but she did not have any salt to salt the meal with, and that was the only bad thing about it. The strainer which they had was not the best strainer in the world, but I could use it all right. However, they had no salt for the meal, but I took the oysters, Mr. President, the way they should be taken, and laid them out on a muslin cloth, about 12 of them, and then you pull the cloth over and you dry the oysters. You dry them, you see, first with a muslin cloth, and then you take the oysters after they have been dried, and you roll them into the meal which is salted. I did not have it salted this night, but it should have been salted. Laughter in the galleries. Mr. President, you roll these oysters in the dry meal. You do not want to cook the meal or put water in the meal at any time or anything like that. Just salt the meal and roll the oysters in it. Then let the grease get boiling hot. You want the grease about 6 inches deep. Then you take the oysters and you place the oysters in the strainer. And then you put the strainer in the grease full depth down to the bottom. Then you fry those oysters in boiling grease until they turn a gold copper color and rise to the top. And then you take them out and let them cool just a little bit before you eat them. Now, Mr. President, most people cannot tell when an oyster is done. They do not know when it has been fried enough. You wrongfully put them on the bottom of the skillet. You've got to have them totally submerged, and you wait till they rise to the top. And when they rise to the top, a golden copper color, then the oyster is cooked just exactly right. And then you take the strainer up out of the grease in the dish, and the oysters are there, and you let them drip for a little while and allow them to cool a little, and then you eat them. Mr. Tidings, Mr. President, the President Officer, does the Senator from Louisiana yield to the Senator from Maryland? Mr. Long, I yield. Mr. Tidings, does the Senator realize when he describes how these oysters are cooked and how appetizing they seem to be that those of us listening are being inhumanly punished? If every member of the Senate will clip out of the record tomorrow what I have said today and not give it to his wife, but go and do it himself and then teach his wife, learn how to do it himself and then teach his wife, he will know how to fry oysters better than most families in Washington. There is no telling how many lives have been lost by not knowing how to fry oysters, but serving them as an indigestible food. Many times we hear of some man who is supposed to have had an acute attack of indigestion or cerebral hemorrhage or heart failure, and the chances are the only thing that was the matter with him was that he had swallowed some improperly cooked oysters. Laughter. It is very important that what I say here shall be correctly printed in the congressional records and that shall be taken to heart and learned by every member of the Senate. Now, I come to pot liquor. Now, I will give my recipe for pot liquor. First, let me tell senators what pot liquor is. Pot liquor is the residue that remains from the commingling, heating, and evaporation. Laughter. Anyway, it is the bottom of the pot. Laughter. Here is how pot liquor is made. First, you get some turnip greens. You have to wash turnip greens many times. One of the principal reasons why people do not like turnip greens is that they never do get them clean. You have to wash them lots of times, said Cato. Lots of times. They always call him Cato. Laughter. Take the ordinary green, turnip greens or mustard greens, though turnip greens are better than mustard greens. Turnip greens contain more manganese than do mustard greens. The trouble with turnip greens is that most people never get the greens washed clean. Sand is always in them. You have to wash them and wash them and wash them, particularly if you do not have any flowing water. If you have good flowing water to shower them with, you can wash them more easily. But you have to wash them plenty of times. In order to get every vestige of dirt and sand and grit out of the greens, you have to wash them many, many times. That is the first thing you do, wash the greens. You wash the turnip with the greens, or you can cut the turnips off and peel them and wash them by themselves, and then wash the greens by themselves if you want to do it that way. All right, this far. Then you take the greens and turnips and put them in the pot. Remember this, do not salt them. Do not put any salt. Do not put any pepper. Do not put any mustard. Do not put any kind of seasoning in the pot with them. Put the greens in the pot. Cut up the turnips. The turnip greens could be cut up a little too. Put them all in there together. Then when you get them all in the pot together, put in a sizable quantity of water. I should say about as much water as you have of turnip greens. Then put in there a little piece of salted side meat. I would say if you have a pot of turnip greens about two-thirds the size of this wastebasket, which I hold in my hand, or perhaps three-fourths that much, you ought to put in about a one-pound hunk of side meat that is sliced, but not clear enough, just down to the skin part. Put about a pound of side meat in there. That side meat is just salty enough and has just salt enough in it that it will properly temper the turnip greens when it has been cooked enough. That will be all the seasoning that is needed. When you have cooked the greens until they are tender and the turnips until they are tender, then you take up the turnips and the greens, and the soup that is left is pot liquor. Laughter. That brings on the real question of the art of eating pot liquor, the matter of consuming pot liquor. You draw off the pot liquor and you eat it separately from the turnip greens. At this point, Mr. Long yielded to Mr. McCarran, who suggested the absence of a quorum. And the roll was called. Mr. President, the quorum called discloses a majority of the members here, and I am glad they are here. Now, I wish to conclude what I am sending out to the neighborhood in general on the recipe. I was at the point where I explained the cooking of oysters. I was just down to the preparation of pot liquor and had gotten through the first stages of the explanation of how to prepare pot liquor. I had explained everything except for to tell that the turnip greens must be cooked long enough. One great trouble here is that they never cook the turnip greens long enough. Do not cook them too long, but cook them long enough. Do not steam them. You have to boil them. I have stated those recipes for the record this afternoon so that they may be had by all members of the Senate and by the public at large tomorrow. Now that so many senators have returned, I am no longer talking for the benefit of the record. I am talking now for the benefit of the Senate because I have senators here. I was speaking to the country a moment ago. The remarks I made were intended more for the country than for the Senate. Of course, I had intended them for the Senate, too, but I intended them more for the country than I did for the Senate. Now, I am talking to the Senate, to the members here only. I am not concerned with whether or not the country hears about it. I want the Senate to get it. I want each and every member of the Senate to make himself ready to stay here for several hours until I get through. And if I can do so without having to yield the floor, I should like to propound a parliamentary inquiry. I want to say I am not talking only for the benefit of the members of the Senate. I am talking for the benefit of the whole community, so that they may read what I say when they get the congressional record. It will be remembered that frequently one sees a congressional record laying around on store counters and in printing offices and in lawyers' offices, but no one will read it at all. Nobody will even open it up half the time, but the issue of the congressional record of this day and date, I will bet, will go down in history as requiring more extra orders for it than ever before, for the people will want to read the various truths and recipes that I've put in the record today, and there will have to be an extra edition of the issue printed today before we get through. It will almost be an education in itself for a man to read the issue of the record which will come out today. Now I continue. I have read the preamble in Section 1 of the Constitution. I now come to Article 2. Section 1 of Article 2 of the Constitution of the United States reads as follows. Mr. Lewis. Mr. President, will the senator yield? Mr. Long. I yield. Mr. Long. I yield for a question. Now, why should not the Senate be willing to listen? After giving that kind of advice to the Senate, the senator from Arizona is under the impression that my advice here this evening is as welcome as a cuckoo clock sounding an alarm at 2 o'clock in the morning. Mr. Ashurst, in a boy's dormitory. Mr. Long, in a boy's dormitory, can you beat that? The fact that I am telling the truth, am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? Mr. McCarran, may I propound another question, assuming that I should now make a motion to recess, would I have the floor on the reconvening of the Senate tomorrow? the President pro tempore. The Senator would not. Upon the completion of his speech or his motion or whatever it might be, the first Senator who should rise tomorrow morning and address the Chair would necessarily, under the rules, have to be recognized. Mr. McCarron, my question was directed pursuant to the statement the Chair last made. Mr. Long, Mr. President, has been previously ruled that the calling of a quorum does not cause the occupant of the floor to lose it. That ruling was made by the Vice President. Might I inquire whether the present occupant of the chair has changed that ruling? The President pro tempore. Is the opinion of the present occupant of the chair that is the intent of the rule, take into consideration the rule that a senator may not be interrupted by a motion or bill or any other matter except to answer a question? That the senator speaking has absolute control over the floor until he sees fit to yield? That if he yields for the purpose of a quorum call, the quorum call is the transaction of business by the Senate. And when the transaction of business by the Senate takes place, when it starts on the other business besides the roll call, the rule that is the duty of the chair to recognize the senator who first addresses the chair is in force. Mr. Thomas of Oklahoma, Mr. President, a parliamentary inquiry. The President pro tempore, the senator from Oklahoma will state it. Mr. Thomas of Oklahoma, it has been stated once or twice this afternoon that one senator can make only two speeches upon any given proposition. My parliamentary inquiry is that the holding of the present occupant of the chair? The President pro tempore, it is. Mr. Black, Mr. President, parliamentary inquiry. The President pro tempore, the senator will state it. Mr. Black, since business was transacted, and since Senator from Louisiana took the floor after that business was transacted and the quorum was called, I ask the chair if this does not constitute the second speech of the Senator of Louisiana. The President pro tempore. The present occupant of the chair was not present at the time the occurrence in question took place and is not acquainted with the facts and therefore cannot answer a parliamentary inquiry of that kind. Mr. Long. Mr. President, I hope the Vice President, the President pro tempore, will not two-time us on this rulings. The Vice President takes the chair and rules one way, and then the President pro tempore comes back and rules another way. I do not know how that is done. We have not had any elections since the last ruling, but we still have another set of rulings. It complicates matters, and I am green in all these matters. I have had very little parliamentary experience. I will ask the chair to take care of me the best he can. I am going to throw myself in the hand of the chair and beg for mercy and ask that if he changes the rules again, he will change them in my favor. Laughter. And give me a good break out of this thing. At my innocent time of life, I undertake to do this. Mr. Long, I yield. Mr. Long, I yield for a question to the senator from Nevada. Mr. McCarron, did the senator from Louisiana say that the book of Daniel was before the book of Job? Mr. Long, no, Mr. President. Mr. McCarron, I just want him to be correct. Mr. Long, the book of Job is before the book of Daniel. Am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? Mr. Long, then I want to warn every member of the Senate now that I do not want anyone to ask me to yield for anything except a question. I hope my friends will take warning because it is up to me to protect my rights about the matter. I do not want anyone to ask me to yield for anything but a question, because I want to make my speech complete and get through with it as soon as I can. I do not want to be disturbed by any interruptions except for questions or parliamentary inquiries or point of order. That is all. Of course, senators have a right to call a quorum. That has been ruled. I have a right to yield for the purpose of calling a quorum, for the purpose of a senator asking a question or submitting a parliamentary inquiry or raising a point of order and things of that kind, but that is all. Mr. McCarron, Mr. President, would the senator yield? Mr. Long, within the rule only. Let us see whether or not I ought read this opinion. It is 21 pages long. If I had the absolute assurance of every senator here that he would remain, I should read this decision. I am going to start reading, and when the first senator leaves, I shall stop reading. I give warning that I am reading this as a labor to myself and as a courtesy to the other members of this body. I'm going to stand here and read this decision from my own desk to every member of this body. I see some of the senators are coming in. The crowd is going. ALA Schlechter Poultry Corporation, Schlechter Live Poultry Market, Joseph Schlechter, Martin Schlechter, Alex Schlechter, and Aaron Schlechter, Petitioners versus the United States of America. The United States of America, Petitioner versus Senators beginning to leave, so there's no need of trying to read them this decision. One senator has already walked out. I'll continue reading, but if many more senators leave, I will not undertake to burden myself with reading this. They would probably rather hear me speak, and if that is the way they feel, I will stay here and speak to them. They sent a coop of chickens, I think, from New Jersey to New York. In that coop there were some Dominicker roosters, a Plymouth Rock, a Buff Cockin, white leghorns, and some common chickens that no one knows by any name except chickens, hillbilly chickens, and various other kinds of chickens. When this coop of chickens got to New York, a man opened the coop. The chickens began to flutter around, and he looked in the coop and said to himself, "I believe I like that pullet right over there, that frying-sized pullet. I believe I will take that one." The man in charge said, "Hold on there, wait a minute there, before you pull out that pullet, hold on a minute, let us get down to the NRA rule book and look through it and see what the rule is before you take a chicken out of the coop, because these chickens come in here in interstate commerce and you have got to follow the rule book." So they got down the rule book, volume 6 or whatever volume it was of the code affecting chickens. I presume there are about 16 or 20 volumes. I do not know as to that. There may not be so many, but let us say for purpose of the argument, they got down volume 6 and looked at page 631 of section 4, subsection Z, subdivision 2. And it said there that no man could reach into a coop of chickens and pick out any particular chicken. They had to blindfold himself and reach in and take whatever chicken came to hand. Laughter. That is in the code. That is part of this wonderful thing that we are sitting here to reenact after a few minutes as soon as I get through talking. Just so as soon as I get through speaking, that will be the next order of the day. The rule book of the code said that the man could not reach into a coop of chickens and take whichever one he wanted. Well, the chicken purchaser said, "We'll say for the sake of argument that chicken there has got pin feathers that I do not like." Or, "I do not want a hen, I want that rooster." Or, "I do not want a rooster, I want a frying-sized chicken." Or, "I want a yellow-legged chicken, I do not want a Buff Cochran, I want a white leghorn." People are funny that way. They think there is some difference in chickens. As a matter of fact, there is not much difference in chickens. The chickens are nearly about the same. Take them up and take them down. A chicken is a chicken, and you cannot make anything else out of it. However, this code said the purchaser had to take whatever chicken he found. He would not do that. So he proceeded to get the chicken that he wanted, regardless of the law and the code. He took the chicken home and he put it in his pot, made some dumplings, probably in violation of the law, being made too big. Laughter. So they indicted the poor devil and ordered him to sent to the penitentiary because he got out of the coop the kind of chicken he wanted. He made the dumplings. He fried some dumplings and probably broiled the gizzard when he should have roasted it. Mr. President, a gizzard is better roasted than broiled. I found that out years ago. Always roast a gizzard, never fry a gizzard. When he got through with the chicken, the man was ordered to jail. Of course, a man does not like to go to jail if he can help himself. I've been there myself. I was there one time because I did not have any other place to go, and another time because they did not want me to go to any other place. But this man decided he would not go to jail, so he went to court. He hired a lawyer. The case was tried, and he lost the case. The judge called him up and said, "Sorry, old man, you violated the law." Defendant said, "What law? The law that Congress passed?" The judge said, "No, you violated the law that the rulemaker under this chicken coop case made, which is found in Rule Book, Volume 6, page 641, paragraph Z, subdivision 2, which provides that a purchaser had to take chickens as they come, that he cannot discriminate between chickens." Laughter. I remember a poem about that. Chickens, chickens, what makes you roost so high? Chickens, chickens, they're going to get you before you die. This fellow then gets a lawyer, pays him his cash, and gets convicted. He appeals the case to the Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the next court up. For the benefit of the layman and the Senate, I will state that the defendant is first tried in the district court. No, I'm wrong as to that. The Supreme Court finally passed on the case. It is a case of very great importance. It is one of the most far-reaching cases of jurisprudence in the country. It is more important than anything since the days of the Roman Empire. Who knows what the Supreme Court held in that case? This is what they held, that a man has the right to any kind of chicken he wants to eat. The presiding officer. The chair will be forced to rule that the senator from Louisiana withdraws his yielding unless he gives heed to the senator from Nevada. Mr. Long, I am listening to every word. The presiding officer. Yielding can be withdrawn at any moment. Mr. Long, I am listening. Presiding officer. The occupants of the galleries will refrain from demonstrations of approval or disapproval. They are guests of the Senate and as such should observe the rules of the Senate. Petitioners were convicted in the District Court of the United States for the Eastern District of New York on 18 counts. Imagine that. 18 chickens. 18 counts. In my time, Mr. President, if a man came and got a sack full of chickens, they did not try him on more than one count. In this case, it is divided up. 18 chickens. 18 counts. 18 sentences in the penitentiary. One Dominique Rooster could send a man to the penitentiary. Charging violations of what is known as the live poultry code. Do you know that if you bought a chicken from a man and it was taken out of a coop in any way other than as providing the code, that would be conspiracy? Mr. President, the law provides that whoever conspires to violate a law of the United States is guilty of a conspiracy and he will go to the federal penitentiary. Any man who bought a chicken out of a chicken coop which was taken out of there anyway except for as was stated in the code that it should be taken out of that chicken coop was guilty of a conspiracy to violate the law. If you took a Dominique Rooster and twisted his neck off when the code said his head ought to be cut off with a hatchet, you would be violating the law. That would be conspiracy and it would cause you to be sent to the penitentiary. Mr. McCarran. Mr. President, will the senator yield? Mr. Long. I yield for a question. Mr. Long. I yield for a question. In other words, you had to let the chickens come out and take them as they came. If you wanted a yellow-legged chicken and a buff-cocking chicken came out, you could not have the yellow-legged chicken, nothing doing. If you wanted a pullet and a rooster came out, you could not have the pullet. Down my way, we are used to having frying-sized chickens. A frying-sized chicken is a yellow-legged pullet, just about 9 inches high. Mr. Harrison. Mr. President, I make it a point of order that the senator from Louisiana cannot take his seat and rest while making his speech. The presiding officer. The chair will say that that question is not before the Senate, because the senator from Louisiana is now on his feet. Mr. Tidings. Is it necessary for the senator from Louisiana to hold his seat while the point of order is being debated? I do not think it is necessary for him to do so. A point of order. Can that be done without taking me off the floor? I will not yield to the senator from Kentucky for anything. Mr. President, I have the floor. Mr. President, I have the floor. I refuse to yield. The Vice President, the senator from Louisiana has the floor. Let me alone. The situation is getting to the point where it is absurd. The action which is being taken on the part of some senators endeavoring to take the floor away from me is absurd. Mr. President, let us have order. Leaders are supposed to show decorum and to set a good example. Give the little fellow a chance. I have been speaking for 9 hours and 10 minutes, endeavoring to explain my position on the bill and on the amendment which is now pending before the Senate. I warn senators that I will only yield for a question. If one makes a parliamentary inquiry, I cannot help myself. If one makes a point of order, I cannot help myself. But I ask the chair to protect me against such interruptions as when senators rise, propound points of order, and then urge that they have me taken from the floor thereby. It is up to the senators who are supposed to be leaders here to protect these sacred rules and precepts of the Senate, which have been in existence for 100 and some years. How many years it is, I do not know. I am setting an example for other members of this body. I am keeping within the dignity and prescribed limits of the decorum which senators are supposed to hold themselves so as to conduct to their conduct here. Those breaking the Constitution will also break the rules of the Senate. Senator from Oklahoma, Mr. Cole reminds me. Now permit me to proceed. We are getting a better crowd in here. The news has gotten around after 9 hours that I am making a marvelous speech, and I congratulate the members of this body for having returned. Mr. President, I spoke here along about 6 or 7 o'clock only to 15 senators. Look how many there are here now. I shall instruct my secretary, if he hears me now, to wire back home and tell my people that the crowd has grown to where there are now 42 senators in the Senate seats listening to my speech on this subject. It is bound to be illuminating to have gained such support as that. Let us be generous to one another here. I beg the Senate, as the body which once had authority as a lawmaking body before we abdicated. I beg of senators to preserve about all that is left to recommend this body to the public. That is our friendship for one another. In a homogeneous body whose members have regard for one another, or at least say that what they have, whether they really have or not, let us preserve that condition. Let us preserve that custom which makes every man call every other man a learned senator, whether he knows he is or is not. Let us preserve these sacred things that mean so much to the dignity of the greatest deliberative body in the world. It is now 10 minutes past 9 o'clock in the evening. I hope the Vice President remains in the chair tonight. Let us not change the rules tonight. Let us wait until tomorrow to change the rules. Let us have the thing understood. This gang rule business on the floor of the United States Senate looks bad to the outside public. They like to know that matters will be considered here as they ought to be. If I could have a vote here now, I think every senator present would say has received some good out of the speech I have made here this evening. I should like to know if there is any man here who is not glad he has heard as much of my speech as he has as far as I have gone. The senator from Mississippi, Mr. Harrison, is not here. He leaves promptly. He is afraid of the logic of my argument. He is ashamed of himself, I believe. He does want to stay here and listen to my speech. I noticed him listening to me a moment ago with his head bowed, and he looked like he was having some remorse of conscience after listening to what I said, so he went outside unwilling to listen any further, apparently. Senators cannot listen to this sound doctrine without becoming convinced. It is having its weight in the country. I should like to have that question propounded to me tomorrow, because so many senators have gone. Many senators have come to me and said, I am tired and I am sleepy and I do not want to stay here any longer. The senators know that all of them are not as young as we young fellows are, and some of them have gone home. Let us wait until tomorrow. Mr. Barkley, Mr. President, will the senator yield further? Mr. Long, I yield for a question. Yes. Mr. President, there's so much discourtesy here among senators that I am actually astounded. I am surprised the way they are treating their friends here. The senator from Washington, Mr. Bone, voted with them this morning, and this is the way they treat him. It does not do him a bit of good to side with them. They will not even give him the respectful attention of letting him have a Supreme Court decision read at the desk by the clerk. I wonder how my friend from Washington feels now that he had to come to me for courtesy, and I gratefully extended it and put myself out of the way to do it, and the ones he lined up with this morning are willing to show him the slightest consideration. No. Sir, I did not yield the floor. I was trying to be courteous to the senator from Maryland, Mr. Tidings, who spoke to me. But let us fight this thing out while we have it with us. We are here at 10 o'clock p.m. as they want to stay here, so let us stay. I have decided I do not want to go home tonight. Laughter. I have seen times when I felt worse than I do now, but I did not want to go home, and I did not dare to go home. Laughter. What is the use of anybody going home now? Where are you going to find any better company than this? There is not any better company than this. It is not costing anybody anything. If I could get home, I should want to come right back here anyway. So I think we ought to stay here. We all learning something. That is, everybody except me. I do not mind imparting information to others. Everybody else is learning something. The Vice President has just come back into the chair. He insists on listening to me after he's had an opportunity to escape quietly. That is the way these remarks are looked upon by people of intellect and learning. They appreciate this logic, and if the lesser lights in the Senate had the same appreciation than the greater lights have, we would get somewhere. That is what we need to do. Everybody needs to listen to me on this particular question and on other questions. He will make very few mistakes who will listen to me all the time. Of course, he might make one now and again, but not often. It is only in the rarest instance that a man makes a mistake when he votes exactly as I vote. But when anybody decides that he is going to go his own way and mess things up, then I am not responsible for it. But if he votes exactly as I vote, he seldom has any regrets. I hope senators will more and more realize that to be the fact. Senators want to stay here. They want to listen to me. I do not see any reason why they should not be allowed to stay. It is only 10 o'clock. This is one of my usual speeches. I have spoken for 10 hours today, and I would not mind speaking 10 hours more. I make the assertion that I will be here speaking at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. I expect to be here. Everybody will be here, I suppose, and as I said, very likely every member of the Senate will in years to come want to claim that he was here, whether he was here or not. He will want to claim in years to come that he heard this speech tonight, that he listened to it, and that he abided by it. It's going to be worth something to the members of the Senate. However, there is no need of anybody punishing himself. As I see it, we have been very nice about this matter. We have offered every kind of agreement on earth. But the others want us to agree to something that has not anything to do with the particular matter before the Senate. They want us to take a vote. I am the only man who has had time to discuss the pending question before the Senate. Nobody else has had a chance to talk about it. They want to vote on it tonight. It is no time to vote. We have not the time. We ought to take more time to consider this matter. We now get back to Ecclesiastes, and I will read some more from Ecclesiastes for the benefit of the Senate. Mr. Lewis passed by the senator from Louisiana. Mr. President, I'm always glad to look at the Senator from Illinois, and it does not disturb me at all when he passes. I am one of the many admirers of the Senator from Illinois. I have greatly admired him for many, many years. A long time before he began to take my advice, I was taking his advice on important questions. I said to him the other day, Senator Lewis, I read a book you wrote on injunctions. He said to me, I congratulate you. The Senator felt that my time had been well spent in reading a book he wrote. I wrote three books later on. I sent the Senator from Illinois copies of two of them, and he stopped calling on me after that. Laughter. The Senator used to call around and pay me a visit every now and again until I reciprocated by sending him copies of the book I had written, and he has never been around to see me since. Laughter. I am now going to read from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 8. I am going to pause there just for that statement before going further into discussion of the question before the Senate. I am going to say to the members of the body what I think they ought to do tonight. If there is no objection from any member of the Senate, I am going to advise this body what I think it ought to do from this time on for the balance of the night. I think we ought to set this motion down to be voted on tomorrow at whatever hour is agreeable. That ought to be the first thing we do. I might withdraw the motion tomorrow after I hear arguments against it. If any of my colleagues have arguments against the motion, I should like to hear them. Those who are not going to vote for the motion should not retain their own wisdom within the cells of their own carcasses. They should give me the advantage of their information and knowledge and their ingenuity as to this matter. Let me know what compels them to vote the other way. It might influence me to change my mind. It might influence me to withdraw the motion. I do not know. Let us have the thing in the open. Let us let everybody do the best he can for himself. Everyone will be the gainer. No one will be the loser if this thing goes over a while. I am astounded. We have been considering this matter for 10 hours and 35 minutes. 10 hours and 35 minutes I have stood here considering this matter with my fellow senators. That is not a particularly long time. I would just as soon stay here and go 10 more hours if senators feel like it, and if it is going to do anybody any good. Let senators decide that. If it is going to do any good, let us stay. If it is not going to do any good, let us go. Let us decide the matter according to what is for the best. But do not think that you are punishing me, because you are not. I am enjoying myself. I am having a good time. I want to stay here if anybody else wants to, just so I really know you like to stay here with me. If I felt that you were staying here against your will and did not want to be here, it would make me feel bad. I do not want to impose my association on any member of the Senate, but do not think you are imposing any hardship on me. I am having a good time. I am having a fine time. I am in hog heaven here discussing this thing. Laughter. I would not like to have anyone think that he is punishing me by punishing himself. I have walked longer than 10 hours and a half when it was pretty cold weather right down the railroad track. I have walked 10 hours and a half and even longer than that. I have walked 18 hours and counted the ties. That is no trouble, and I know that anybody who can walk 18 hours can talk 18 hours, but I would not want to have anybody think I am imposing myself upon those of lesser physical powers of resistance. When I see my colleagues here slumbering in their seats, going to sleep on me, I feel sorry for them. I feel I am the cause of physical punishment and annoyance. It troubles my mind, and I want to acquit myself of any intention of that kind of thing. Let senators who are sleeping go home. Let them not stay here on my account. Let every senator who is sleepy go home. I beg every member of this body wants himself into the arms of Morpheus to go home at once. I mean by the arms of Morpheus, Mr. President, that whoever wants to go to sleep should go to sleep. Let every man here in the Senate who is staying here on my account go home. Senators do not need to stay here with me. I will be here 24 hours from now getting through this conversation on the bill. Do not fool yourselves. Mr. President, I will be here a long time. Do not think I am being punished by this thing. I have only made my first speech. I am not yet through with my first speech. I have got another speech coming before this thing is to be voted on. I am only on speech number one. I am very much in the position that my uncle was in. My uncle was one of the best men who ever lived. He moved from Ohio down to Louisiana. He was a man who always gave his time up to other men. If he saw a man who was in trouble, he would lay down his own affairs and go help him out in his troubles. He knew a young man down in Louisiana who was a bartender who did not know how to miss drinks, and in private conversation with the young fellow he found out that he was going to lose his job because he did not know how to mix drinks. My uncle went down to the place where he was working one morning and put his foot on the rail and said to the young man, I am going to stay with here until you find out how to mix drinks which the people like. My uncle stayed with him all that day until closing time that night and directed him how to mix the drinks and drank them until he found out that the young man had mixed them right. Laughter. He gave his time that whole day long to helping that young man. That is the kind of reputation my family has. We have always given our time up to other people, and if it will do anybody any good, we will stay here right now and advise the members of this body along good, sound, constructive lines. The senator from Maryland, as I passed him, asked me in a rather low voice if there's any chance the Supreme Court of the United States retaining me to give them advice on the law. The Supreme Court could do worse than that, Mr. President. I gave the Supreme Court some advice on the law, whether they took it or not, the last time they had these cases up. I will tell the Senate what I did. I got that great American newspaper, The American Progress, that great newspaper of culture and thought and judgment. I persuaded the editor of that paper, after giving him the cost of printing the edition, to publish one of my great speeches in it. And I sat down and mailed every member of the United States Supreme Court a copy of that newspaper. I mailed a copy to the office of every member of the Supreme Court and also to his residence. I mailed to every member of the Supreme Court of the United States a copy of all my speeches for 3 months, some 17 speeches. Some of them were nearly as good as the speech I have made here today. I sent them 17 speeches. I sent every member of the Senate a copy of that newspaper. I personally paid the subscription for every member of the United States Senate in order that he might receive The American Progress. The senator from Kansas, Mr. Capper, runs some newspapers, but he never has sent the senators copies of his newspapers free as I did mine. I was not selfish about it. I was willing that everything I had advantage of should be shared by other members of the United States Senate and also by the Supreme Court. I do not claim to be responsible for the NRA, but it was after the Supreme Court of the United States, each and every member of it, had received free copies of my paper, that they rendered that wonderful decision on NRA. Laughter in the galleries. I yield for a further question. I yield further. The presiding officer, the chair feels it incumbent upon him to state that under the rule of the Senate, the senator may yield for a question, but the chair does not believe under the rule of the Senate that the senator may yield for two questions at one time. Mr. Long, I will yield for another question unless I am supposed to answer the first one now. Presiding officer, the chair does not desire to take advantage of any senator and made the announcement for that purpose. Mr. Long, I am glad to yield. Will the chair allow me to yield again to another question at this time? The presiding officer, it is not a question of what the chair allows, it is a question of the chair's construction of the rules of the Senate. The chair interrupted the senator from Nevada to announce there could not be any suggestion of any advantage when taken by any senator that under the chair's constructions of the rule a senator may yield but for one question at a time. Mr. McCarran, a matter of parliamentary construction inquiry. Must that question be confined to one sentence or declaration? May it not be a hypothetical question? The presiding officer, the chair will not undertake to pass on the form in which any senator shall propound a question, but in view of the parliamentary inquiries and the points of order which have been raised today, the chair thought it a fair policy to announce that today that the chair's constructions of the rule is that the senator may yield for only one question at a time. Mr. McCarran, must that be a question of one sentence or may it be of two sentences? Presiding officer, the chair will not undertake to pass on. Mr. McCarran, I inquire of the senator from Louisiana what his recipe has to do with the recent declaration of the executive as to the distribution of wealth through taxation. I hate to see the Senate lose so much time doing it. I have an idea that there will be an improvement in this body tomorrow. I think many senators tomorrow will be much more equipped to act on these matters. I wish we might come back in the fold after we have slept 8 or 10 good hours. I wish we'd all go home and sleep and come back tomorrow and let me make another speech for about 10 or 12 hours on these fundamental principles, and I believe we'll all gain as much tomorrow as we all gain today, perhaps by listening to a discourse on these questions. And the sound doctrine that I have undertaken to expound here among the members of this body. The Senate, however, has only begun to thin out again. There are not many senators listening to me. There are only 20 members of the Senate listening to this speech at 11 o'clock. Soon it will be midnight. 11:30 o'clock, and this small audience here listening to the speech of this consequence at this time of night. That's what's discouraging about it. And that is why one would almost feel like giving up the effort, not trying to do any good when people do not appreciate what you were saying any more than that. It is discouraging. Mr. Tiding, Mr. President, will the senator yield? Mr. Long, I yield for a question. Here senators are tonight, brothers and descendants of the same kind of people, and they are all awake, wanting to stay awake unnecessarily when everybody ought to be asleep. 12 o'clock midnight is time for people to be slumbering. People should be asleep. We should not be kept here. I think it's time to rest, time to think. When senators rise tomorrow, they will have a better understanding all the way down the line. I yield. I wish to make my speech. Mr. Bone, will the senator yield? Mr. Long, wait a moment. Mr. Bone, will the sender yield now? Mr. Long, I yield for a question. Mr. Long, Mr. President, I will not yield to anyone. The Vice President, the senders decline to yield. Mr. Swellenbach, Mr. President, will the senator yield for a question? Mr. Long, no, I will not yield. I will not yield to anyone until I get this confusion settled. I wish to get the regular order. I wish to have all this confusion settled, and then we shall know where we are. Any number of parliamentary inquiries and points of order being made, and it is impossible for me to keep them straight in my head. There are enough parliamentary inquiries and regular orders and declaration of principles going around here for 14 national conventions. I yield to the senator for Alabama for a... I yield for a question. I yield for a question, but I do not want to give up the floor. I would rather my friend from Nevada would handle it with them. Mr. President, it is now 1:10 o'clock in the morning. Soon the sun will be rising again. I am satisfied that with the new day we will all feel refreshed, and we will be better able to do our work here. If I am let alone for the next hour, I will get harmony in this body, whether I get agreement or not. I will get this feeling. I am going to speak to those senators tonight on the matter of our being brotherly about one another. I am going to speak, Mr. President, on the matter of goodwill, and that is what I am going to speak on. I am going to read from Timothy. I am going to show the Senate what is wrong. I wish to read from 1 Timothy, the 6th chapter, 10th verse. Oh yes, I was speaking a while ago, and the expression I then used came out of Gallatin's. I just happened to think of that. I believe it was Gallatin's 4th chapter. Mr. Barclay, will Senator yield for me to read those verses? Mr. Long, yes. It is 1:20 in the morning, 13 hours and 20 minutes ago, I began my speech expounding and lecturing on the Constitution of the United States. 13 hours and 20 minutes ago, I began. Still there are some who remain. Still there are some who are here. I hope they will still be here when I concluded my remarks this morning or this afternoon. It will be a fine thing if 24 hours of uninterrupted defense might be given to the Constitution of the United States. If it could be said that 24 hours of good, staunch, stable, sincere, faithful, wholesome defense had been given to the Constitution of the United States in the Senate, it would encourage every market in the whole civilized world tomorrow. Nothing would have greater influence. There are members of this body who are older than I am and who perhaps would rather go to bed than stay up this late at night. I am very sorry that we are not to have a vote on this thing at a later date when everybody could be happy. That is what we ought to do. Everybody could be happy. Everybody could be neighborly. Everybody could be satisfied. There is no harmony that would be other than good. There would be no discord. I am very sorry we do not agree. It is not my fault we do not agree. I think it has been because of a rather unreasonable stand that we have not agreed on this matter long before. I yield for a question. 13 hours and a half. I hope they can get together. I shall be glad to have them get together. I do not know what difficulty it is that they do not get together. They ought to be able to get together. Everybody ought to be settled. Everybody ought to be happy. Everybody could be happy if they would only get together. I am sorry they could not get together. I wish they would. I wish they could. There seems to be no reason why they should not. I see senators in every quarter yawning. Everybody wants to go to sleep. Everybody is tired. Everybody is worn up. Everybody is sleepy. They can imagine how marvelous it would feel to close their eyes and let things go by without worrying about them. The senator from Kentucky, Mr. Barclay, rubs his eyes. The senator from New York, Mr. Wagner, looks about as bad. The senator from Pennsylvania, Mr. Guffett, is all worn out. They all want to go to bed. There's not a man here who could not talk at least 40 hours if he wanted to. Do I not know that? There's not a senator here who could not talk a couple of days if he wanted to. Anyone can do that. I could do it. Any of my colleagues could do it. Why have that kind of fiasco? Why not let us meet here at 12 o'clock and vote? If the senators go home now, by the time they get home and get back, they will not be able to sleep for over 7 hours at the most and get back and vote. It will only be 12 hours before 12 o'clock noon. Why not agree? Just as soon as senators are ready to go home and I am ready to vote, that's a fair proposition. We may be here until 12 o'clock and still no vote. I am pleading for harmony. The only thing I ask senators to do is go home and sleep and come back and vote. They will not lose any time. It is already another day. All I am asking to do is sleep before they vote. That is all. Sleep and then vote. Sleep, sleep, close your eyes and sleep. Laughter. It is 14 minutes before 2 o'clock right now. 10 hours from now it will be noon. If we go home now and spend an hour getting home and getting to bed, and an hour getting up and getting back here, the earliest we can.